Production and distribution of City Club Forums on IdeaStream Public Media are made possible by PNC and the United Black Fund of Greater Cleveland Incorporated.
Hello and welcome to the City Club of Cleveland, where we are devoted to conversations of consequence that help democracy thrive. It's Tuesday, March 5th, and I'm Nick Castell, government reporter with Signal Cleveland. And I'll be your moderator for Ballot 2024, the primary contest for Cuyahoga County Prosecutor. Prosecutors have enormous influence in their communities. They decide what charges to bring against people accused of crimes. They present felony cases to grand juries and take those cases to trial. They represent the county in litigation, ranging from tax foreclosure to lawsuits over the treatment of detainees in the county jail. The prosecutor's philosophy, experience, and decisions are felt throughout the legal system here in Cuyahoga County. Two candidates are running in the March 19th Democratic primary. Given the partisan makeup of this county, the winner of that primary will surely have the wind at their back as they go into the November general election. Joining me on stage to my right is Matthew Ahn, formerly a law professor at Cleveland State University College of Law. Thank you. Mr. Ahn has worked in the Federal Public Defender's Office and clerked for judges at the federal level as well. Matthew grew up in North Royalton and received his JD from New York University School of Law. To my left is incumbent Michael O'Malley. Thank you. Mr. O'Malley was sworn into office in January of 2017 and is currently in his second term as Cuyahoga County Prosecutor. Prior to this role, he served as the City of Parma's Safety Director. Mr. O'Malley grew up in Old Brooklyn, which he represented as a Cleveland City Council member and received his JD from Cleveland Marshall College of Law. Now, both sides have agreed to the following rules. I will be asking the questions, and we've asked you, our community, to submit questions in advance. Those have been reviewed by the City Club Debate Committee, a bipartisan group of City Club members, and we've incorporated those ideas into the questions that you will hear today. Neither of the candidates has viewed the questions in advance. Timed responses are 60 seconds and may be directed to a single candidate or both. Any rebuttals from the candidates may be granted at the discretion of the moderator. You'll have 30 seconds, and I want to have a conversation with some real back and forth here. Opening statements will be 90 seconds long. The order of opening statements was determined by a coin flip prior to the start of the forum and witnessed by both parties. It was determined that Michael O'Malley will go first. Closing statements will also be 90 seconds long. The candidate who goes first in the opening statements will also go first in the closing statements. In order to get as much substantive debate in as possible, we ask our audience please refrain from applause or otherwise interacting with or attempting to influence this debate, except at this moment where we welcome our debaters to the City Club of Cleveland. Thank you all very much. We will now turn to our opening statements. Again, each candidate has 90 seconds. Mr. O'Malley, we'll start with you.
Thank you, Nick. It's a pleasure to be here. I want to thank Nick for donating his time to moderate this important debate, as well as all of you in the audience who've taken time today to be here. I have 38 years of public service that have prepared me for not just this moment, the moment that occurred 8 years ago when I was elected your Cuyahoga County Prosecutor. Included in that, it is important to remember that there are three qualities that are really, I believe, needed as a prosecutor: experience, leadership, and philosophy. My experience includes 31 years as a practicing attorney in this county. My experience also includes working as an assistant law director, working as a probation officer, having a private law practice for 10 years, becoming an assistant county prosecutor for 6 years, and finally becoming a public safety director before I was elected county prosecutor 8 years ago. Leadership. Without experience, you cannot lead. leadership by developing things like the County Early Intervention Center for Juveniles, leading the forefront of the opioid crisis and bringing back $200 million to Cuyahoga County that we then use for a diversion center, starting a crime strategies unit and solving crimes before they occur. And then philosophy, working to rehabilitate low-level offenders while also keeping our communities safe by holding those most violent criminals accountable.
Thank you very much, Mr. Romali. Experience leadership philosophy.
Thank you.
And now, please again, if you would, refrain from your applause until the end of this program. Mr. Ahn, we'll now go to you for your opening statement.
All right, thank you, Mr. Cassell. As a member of the City Club, it is an honor to be on the stage today. My name is Matthew Ahn. I am a law professor from North Royalton with a decade of legal experience across criminal and civil litigation. And I am running for Cuyahoga County Prosecutor because I believe that we can create justice for all. Now, I've fought for justice as educational security, both teaching at Tri-C and as a special education attorney representing parents. I've also fought for justice as rehabilitation and success upon reentry as a public defender. And the fundamental truth is that we create justice for all when we seek to prevent crime, not just react to it. Unfortunately, at the top of the prosecutor's office, we have a crisis of leadership. The prosecutor's office, over the last 5 years, has tried nearly as many children as adults as the rest of Ohio combined, and 92% of those children are Black. The office has also led the nation in new death sentences in recent years and has delayed closure for those who are wrongfully convicted. We can do better than O'Malley's mess. That's why, as your prosecutor, I will target the crimes that harm our community, build an office in the people's interest, work to break the cycle of trauma, and support rehabilitation through services. That is justice for all. It's what our community has been asking for, and it's what our community deserves. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ahn. We'll now turn to the questions, and as a reminder, some questions may come from Cuyahoga County residents and those beyond who are interested in this race, which we have then incorporated into this program. And I will note when this is the case by including their name and their city. Timed responses, again, are 60 seconds and may be directed to a single candidate or both with ample opportunity for rebuttal at my discretion. The city of Cleveland has seen more than 150 homicides in each of the last 4 years. That number appears to be coming down from a peak in 2020, but the death toll is still quite high in this community. This question will be for both of you. Why have we seen a rise in homicides in Cleveland, and what should the prosecutor's office do to bring that rate of killings down? Mr. O'Malley, we'll start with you.
Well, certainly, this is not just a Cleveland issue. If you look at the national trends, homicides are up across the country and including in Ohio. I think there are several factors. Certainly, let's start with the work that my crime strategies unit has been doing with all the local police agencies. I have placed significant resources to trying to work with our local law enforcement agencies towards apprehending those who are responsible for crime. But in addition to that, we can't deny the factor that our local law enforcement agencies are losing officers. When I was a Cleveland City Councilman 20 years ago, we had 2,000 Cleveland police officers. Today, we are about 1,150. That's not nearly as many people on patrol, it's not nearly as many people in the detective units, and it is causing a significant and serious issue within our community, and it is something that this community has to work hard to try to solve.
Thank you very much, Mr. O'Malley. Mr. Ahn, we'll give this question to you now.
Absolutely. I do want to note that in my opponent's answer, he did talk about, you know, apprehending criminals again after crime has already happened, rather than focusing on the important work of prevention. We've seen record highs in juvenile homicides the last 3 years running, in part because I believe that the juvenile unit is not best structured for that early intervention and prevention. That is one structural change that I would make in this office. I also want to note that I was here 3 weeks ago when Steve Dettelbach spoke, the head of ATF, and he mentioned that there are other cities that are seeing great gains in terms of combating especially gun crime. we are not seeing those same gains here that we're seeing in Atlanta and Houston. And I believe part of that is a necessary for us to shift again from reacting to the serious crime to preventing it, to making sure that we are providing ways for folks to not get stuck in that cycle where they end up escalating to the serious crime we've seen in our communities. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ahn.
May I?
Sure, we'll give you 30 seconds, Mr. O'Malley.
Matt's answer simplistically ignores the fact that we now have an early intervention center that I led the charge in developing. We now have, since 2019, an early intervention center that gets to the root of the causes of the juvenile violence we're seeing. The success rate in that facility is remarkable. 90% of the individuals who are now in the early intervention program do not recidivate within 1 year. Additionally, coming in June of 2024, under my leadership, is now a new crime gun intelligence center founded with ATF
much.
For the first time in Cuyahoga County.
Mr. O'Malley, thank you. Any rebuttal if you'd like, we'll move on then.
Absolutely. I think that, you know, we need to talk about diversion. We need to talk about early intervention. But I will note that my opponent's sort of claims about diversionary success, you know, this shows that we actually need to further expand diversion opportunities at the juvenile unit and at the adult center as well, where only 96 people have ever been taken in lieu of an arrest, as according to the latest diversion board report. In 3 years. We can do so much better than we're doing already to prevent the serious crime.
Thank you, Mr. Ahn. And the topic of diversion we'll get to later, so we can continue this part of the conversation in a little bit. Mr. Ahn, I want to turn to you with this question. This is for you. You have not served in elected office before, unless I'm mistaken, and your Ohio criminal court experience consists of 2 years at the Federal Public Defender's Office. Do you have the criminal court experience necessary to take on a job of this magnitude?
Absolutely. I have succeeded in these practice roles, including at the Federal Public Defender's Office, at every stop in my career. My opponent does make a big deal about my experience, but does he offer experience or only entrenchment in a system that has been biased for far too long? For those of us who look different and who think a little differently and who run for office based on our commitment to justice rather than invitation from insiders, for those of us who dare to run for office on what we know rather than who we know, our experience is always attacked and dismissed. And that is exactly what my opponent has done over the last several months to avoid talking about his record and the fact that Cuyahoga County residents feel increasingly unsafe. I have the data, the research, and yes, the experience to lead this office and to solve our community's problems. I've turned that data into wins in court at every stop in my practice career. I have the integrity you need from your lawyer, and my opponent only offers entrenchment. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ahn. Mr. O'Malley, I'll give you some time.
Absolutely. Leadership is about, in my tenure, developing an early intervention center. Leadership is about bringing back $200 million in Cuyahoga County to start a diversion center for adults. Leadership is being at the right place at the right time to do what's right for the people of this county. When Matt talks about his leadership, he has advocated, believe it or not, in a community that has solved far too much violence to abolish police, which has got to be, this is not the rantings of a 16-year-old, this is from a 29-year-old man who knows better and knows what would happen in this community if we did not have police.
Thank you, Mr. O'Malley. Mr. Ahn, I'll give you a chance to respond to that.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, these false attacks that you're hearing from, like, these ridiculous attacks from my opponent are because he doesn't want to talk about his own record. Again, only 96 people have ever been brought to the Adult Diversion Center in lieu of an arrest. It is not solving the problem it was built to solve. And I don't know if the county prosecutor understands how many people have been brought, even in the last reporting period, to the diversion center in lieu of arrest. The answer is one. One in the last 2 month reporting period. We can do so much better than O'Malley's mess.
Mr. Ahn, thank you very much. And again, we will get, sure, if you'd like to respond, and then we will move on.
Well, I noticed he didn't indicate whether he has advocated to abolish the police, which was the simple question, and is readily available on websites. But leadership is about doing what's right. It's about having the fortitude and the backbone to both push back and to stand up. And I have done that in every tenure, and I believe in the 7 years as my tenure as Cuyahoga County Prosecutor, I've done more to change this criminal justice system than any prosecutor before me.
All right, thank you very much. Now, Mr. O'Malley, this next question will be directed for you. A few years ago, an appeals court threw out the convictions of Kenny Phillips and Michael Sutton in a 2006 shooting case. You took them to trial a second time, and a jury found them not guilty. One of the defense attorneys in that case, Justin Herdman, said that retrial never should have happened and that it raised questions about how the prosecutor's office handles wrongful conviction cases. How do you respond to that criticism?
Absolutely. Well, let me just say this. That case was remanded for retrial. It was not a dismissal. And how I respond to that is that I represent victims of crime. And in that case, we had plenty of evidence to go forward, as well as two victims who suffered gunshot wounds, I believe one of them to their head. And we have victims that we have to consult with, and we have to determine whether we believe ethically we can go forward. And in that particular case, after talking to those victims and weighing the evidence before us, we came to the absolute conclusion that the right thing to do to represent those victims the way we should as the prosecutors of this county is to go forward with that case. And we respect the decisions that come from the court, whether it's a guilty or not guilty. That's my role as the county prosecutor. And so, again, we represent victims of crime, we consult with those victims, and we move forward when appropriate.
All right, thank you, Mr. O'Malley. I'll give you 30 seconds if you'd like to answer any of that.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the everything we've seen from this prosecutor's office demonstrates a lack of taking wrongful conviction seriously, again, from the top of the prosecutor's office. Kenny Phillips and Michael Sutton were not the only folks who were retried after getting out of prison after 20 or 30 or even 45 years in prison. All of them resulted in not guilty verdicts. In addition to that, the members, the external board of the Conviction Integrity Unit all resigned at once in protest because of the escalating failures of my opponent's leadership. We can
Thank
take wrongful
much,
conviction
Mr.
seriously because justice for all requires that we do so.
Thank you very much. Mr. O'Malley, I'll give you 30 seconds and we can
Absolutely.
Move on.
Absolutely. Well, to be clear, I started the outside review board for the Conviction Integrity Unit. It was just only after we were faced with attempting to litigate their emails and their phone records, whether we felt it was appropriate moving forward with the Conviction Integrity Outside Review Panel. And my staff, after deep deliberation, came to the conclusion that it was no longer workable given the gamesmanship of the defense bar.
Thank you very much, Mr. O'Malley. This next question will be for both of you. In 2022, in Cuyahoga County, more than 60 minors were bound over from juvenile court to adult court. The county is responsible for a large portion of the juvenile bindovers statewide. According to state data, of the young people bound over in the most recent fiscal year available, most are black, most are male, and most are teenagers. 22% faced murder charges and 66% faced other felony ones. But even teens as young as 14 have been tried as adults. For both of you, when should the prosecutor's office decide to ask a judge to bind a teen over to adult court rather than trying the case in juvenile court? Mr. Ahn, we'll start with you.
Absolutely. what we're seeing, again, out of the juvenile unit of the prosecutor's office is a lack of results. Again, homicides are up, juvenile homicides, record highs in the last 3 years. This is because my opponent has not focused on the necessary work of prevention and has instead chosen to focus on reaction after the crime has already happened when it's too late. This is why, right, I will follow the data and the research that tells us that children who are moved over into adult court and sent to adult prison are far more likely to commit more crimes upon their release. I will use every tool in the juvenile court system, including serious youthful offender sentences, that will best hold our children accountable while ensuring that we are doing everything in our power to lower and decrease recidivism and to give them the tools that they need to be productive adults in our society. The evidence is clear, the research is clear, we just have to follow it. We have not done it because of my opponent's tenure.
Mr. O'Malley, the same question for you. You've got 60 seconds.
Absolutely. You know, the sad reality is we live in a very violent time, not just in Cuyahoga County, throughout all the urban counties as a whole. People don't realize, however, that the overall number of youth going into incarceration facilities, whether it's ODYS or bindovers, is down significantly. In 2010, this county sent 208 youth to ODYS. In 2023, we sent 70. I don't believe there's a person in this room that believes crime is down or juvenile violent crime is down. There has been a push for rehabilitation as opposed to incarceration. But when you look at the 2023 numbers and 29 of the new 61 new bindovers are there for aggravated murder or murder, and you throw in another 9 for attempted murder, the individuals who are being bound over are the most violent individuals within our society, and for the sake of the people in their neighborhoods, they need to be removed, and that community needs to be restored to safety.
Thank you very much, Mr. O'Malley. If you'd like to respond, I'll give you 30 seconds, Mr. Otto.
First, I'll note that my opponent did not answer the question about when bindovers should be used. I would also like to note that that rise in crime has happened under my opponent's watch. Right? We have the tools to actually hold children accountable in juvenile court without creating career criminals. That is exactly what I have pledged to do. That is what we can do rather than this policy of increasing bindovers that, by the way, started in my opponent's first year before juvenile serious crime started to rise. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ahn. Mr. O'Malley, I'll give you 30 seconds if you'd like, and we can move on from there.
Well, the facts are the facts. The reality is there are less individuals going into incarceration who are juveniles. The amount of juveniles being bound over has increased statewide and across our county, but sadly, discretionary bindovers in our county have actually gone down. Total bindovers in our county have done. Since I led the charge to open the diversion center in 2019, discretionary bindovers are down 70%. Last year, there was 9 discretionary bindovers out of 3,000 cases.
Thank you very
much. And 3 of those were murders.
Thank you. I do want to stay on this topic of youth in the criminal justice system. I want to frame it a little different way now. A new report from Cleveland's Department of Public Safety says that youth arrests increased 21% last year. Beyond the issue of bindovers, what approach should the prosecutor's office take with young people under the age of 18 who are accused of crimes? As Justin from Cleveland's Stockyards neighborhood asked us, how do you plan to stop young people who have committed violent crimes from reoffending? Mr. O'Malley, we'll start with you.
Absolutely. You know, when I came into my office in 2017, there was not an intervention center. Individuals were evaluated after their case was adjudicated. I came in 2017, working with the pastors in Mission. We got an early intervention center founded and started by 2019. Since 2019, on average, we are now screening every juvenile case and are diverting 1,000 of those with programming to help them. And like I said, the results are fantastic. 90% do not recidivate within a year. That is leadership. That's not talk. It's about sitting in a room, working with the judges, working with the county council, and getting it done. So again, we continue to see also policies in Columbus that have flooded this community with guns in a way that we have never seen. So we are also dealing with that sad reality, and God willing, when
much.
We take Columbus back, we're going to fix that.
Thank you, Mr. O'Malley. Mr. Ahn, the same question for you. How should the prosecutor's office work with young people who are accused of crimes?
Oh, yes, it's a great question. And this is where early intervention is absolutely key. What I intend to do is to actually expand the scope and the use of diversion. Oftentimes, right, one of the things that has come up at city council hearings, for example, is this question of lead exposure. One of the things that I think needs to be asked in these cases, right, we need to make sure that, again, the children are not escalating to more and more serious crime. That being said, when we do need to hold somebody accountable, we have the serious youthful offender mechanism that is available to us in the juvenile courts that is better set up to actually help children put their lives back together. I do want to point out again that while my opponent loves to blame folks in Columbus and say it's not his job to fix the sort of serious gun crime, I have actually advocated for creative ordinance to get around state legislation. I have actually looked at, you know, how do we actually keep the supply of guns from getting into our community? That's what I will do.
Thank you very much. For the sake of getting to some more questions, I do want to move on. We've got a lot of other meat to get to here. Your next question is about Cleveland Police. Cleveland Police now employ fewer than 1,200 officers, down from a recent high of 1,600 in 2020. Now, the prosecutor does not hire police officers, but you do work with them every single day. Mr. Ahn, we'll start with you. Does police understaffing in Cleveland make the city less safe?
I believe that the levels that we're seeing now are really concerning. But what the prosecutor's office should be doing about that, and what I intend to do, is to support our police officers that we have on our force, make sure that they are empowered to do the kind of complex investigations into the serious crimes that are harming our community. We are asking our police officers to wear dozens and dozens of different hats. They're supposed to be mental health professionals and first responders and traffic enforcement, and all of these different things all at once. The prosecutor's office's role is to make sure that they don't have even more on their plate than that. And so I want to ensure that we have open lines of communication from me directly to police leadership in all of our different police departments across the county. I want to ensure that they understand why cases are being charged and why they aren't, and that to the extent that we can ease scheduling burdens on them for when they have to come to court, I want to make sure to prioritize that so that police can do police work and actually keep our community safe.
Thank you, Mr. Ahn. Mr. O'Malley, the same question for you.
You know, it's startling to hear somebody blame every issue in this county on the county prosecutor's office. Somebody with even a minute idea of how the safety functions run in a community know that the Cleveland Police are through hierarchy under the direction of the mayor, the public safety director, and the city police chief. My ability to direct Cleveland policy, whether it's for hiring or firing or anything, or any other police agency in this county, is zero. But it should make you question why somebody who's running for the top office in this county feels a need to distort reality to mislead the people and the voters of this county. And if Matt doesn't know who controls this, the Cleveland Police Department, he ought not be running for this position.
Mr. Ahn, I will give you a chance to respond to that. If you would, please hold your applause. Thank you.
I think the policy, the policy goals that I outlined are policy goals within the prosecutor's office themselves about how police can be better supported by the prosecutor's office. I'm not looking to direct police policy. I would be running for the wrong job if I were trying to do that. I am simply looking to make sure that individual police officers' jobs are easier. And if my opponent did not get that from my remarks, I question his ability to listen to folks who actually are affected by the issues in the prosecutor's office.
Mr. Ahn, thank you very much. Mr. O'Malley, if you would,
I'll
give you
30
seconds.
I would just simply rebut that I think it's not surprising that virtually every elected official, every union, including the police unions, and everybody has supported me because I do have the experience, I've demonstrated the leadership, and I know how local government works. And part of being the prosecutor is also being somebody who can sit down at a table and respectfully dialogue to accomplish the common good for our community. And that's something you need to learn.
Thank you, Mr. O'Malley. Mr. Ahn, if you'd like to respond, I'll let you guys go back and forth a little more.
I mean, I've never seen you at a Cleveland City Council meeting. I attend fairly regularly. You know, I am very closely involved in how my local government works. It's part of the reason why I was helping to support the Cuyahoga County Jail Coalition when they were fighting against a new replacement jail on a toxic site. These are the sorts of things that I can help empower folks who are fighting for justice in the community to do. That kind of partnership is something that I will continue as your Cuyahoga County prosecutor because I know how to collaborate with individuals, even if my opponent has not been in the community to see it.
Thank you, Mr. Ahn. I want to go on to some more questions. We will get to the jail issue, though, because which just came up. Mr. O'Malley, I'm going to start with you, but this question will be for both of you. When you ran for office in 2016, you said that you would recuse yourself from police shooting cases and turn those over to the state. 8 years in, is this the right policy for the prosecutor's office?
Yes. To be clear, what I said was all use of deadly force cases,
okay,
which is different.
Sure.
Use of deadly forces, and it is absolutely the right decision. Again, when I was running 8 years ago, the issue was, and it was felt, and the Ohio Supreme Court had done a report and recommended the same thing, is that local prosecutors recuse themselves. The Supreme Court actually went as far enough to say that there should be an agency created with the Attorney General's office to handle all use of deadly force cases for police. But my election, I pledged that I would never handle a use of deadly force case because of the appearance of conflict between my office and the local law enforcement agencies. So during my first week, I immediately implemented that policy, and I think it was the right policy, and I think it continues to be the right policy that we not handle use of deadly force cases within this county.
Thank you, Mr. O'Malley. Mr. Ahn, the same question. Should the prosecutor's office recuse itself from local use of deadly force cases?
I think the policy is not on its own a big problem, but what we see here in Cuyahoga County, especially with our history of police misconduct, is a lack of trust in our criminal justice system to handle these cases appropriately. What I have pledged to do is to create a brand new public integrity unit within the prosecutor's office to actually handle not just these kinds of cases, but other abuses of elected office and abuses of power locally, right? So they do not go to our Republican Attorney General to sit. These are the kinds of things that will help us actually rebuild trust in the criminal justice system to ensure that folks see that the Cuyahoga County Prosecutor's Office is working for the community, not against the community, and for us to understand that the system is fair for everybody. This, among other units that I want to create, including a labor justice unit to focus on wage theft, are going to be things that will help us actually move our communities forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ahn.
May I?
If you'd like, you'll give me 30 seconds.
Just a real question, real quick. The county prosecutors does have an office or unit that handles public integrity crimes, and it's called the Economic Crimes Unit, and it is that unit that led to the indictment recently of 18 East Cleveland police officers, both current and former. So we do have a public integrity unit. It may go by a different name that does just what you're seeking, but that's why it's so critical to actually understand and know what is going on within the office for which you seek.
Mr. Ahn, 30 seconds.
So the indictments of the East Cleveland police officers were not a conflict of interest, but deadly force cases are?
Absolutely. And I think our results show exactly why. I think we're 8-for-8, and we have 10 more to go.
Thank you both very much. I promised we would get to the Diversion Center, and here we are. The Cuyahoga County Diversion Center opened in 2021 with the goal of getting people the substance and behavioral health services they need rather than sending them to jail. But more than 2 years later, in the words of County Councilman Michael Gallagher recently, the center is not doing what we wanted it to do specifically with the jail population. This will go to both of you. Mr. Ahn, we'll start with you. Is the Diversion Center living up to its potential?
Absolutely not. It is not working in the way that it was supposed to work. I mentioned the statistics earlier. Only 96 people have been brought to the Diversion Center in the 3 years that it's been open in lieu of arrest. Most of the charges that folks would have been charged with instead are relatively low misdemeanors, things like trespassing. So these are crimes that would not have led to lengthy jail stays in the first place. In other words, the Diversion Center has not led to a decrease in the jail population. If that is what we are looking to do, diversion needs to be greatly expanded in the adult system in order for us to make sure that folks who do not need to be in the jail are not actually in the jail. Indeed, the thing that actually has been more effective at reducing the jail population in the Cleveland.com report back in January, when we learned that 950 inmates had been sent out of county to reduce the jail population over the previous 5 years.
Thank you,
we
Mr.
can do better with diversion.
Mr. O'Malley, is the Diversion Center living up to its potential?
Absolutely not. You know, as I indicated, that Diversion Center was funded by my work and my office's work and the attorneys we hired from the opioid litigation. It paid for the Diversion Center. My hope was that we would see local law enforcement agencies routinely, and we allow local law enforcement agencies on low-level felonies and, well, we don't deal with the misdemeanors, to take people there to keep them out of the county jail. So I was very disheartened under the last Cleveland mayoral term where there was a dispute even within the city of Cleveland about dropping individuals off at the Diversion Center. You know, as indicated earlier, I don't control any of the law enforcement agencies within this county. I have certainly let my views known, and I hope that we continue to see the growth that we are seeing. But again, we need buy-in from all law enforcement. But the problem also with the diversion center is that it is not a lockdown facility. So even if you get dropped off
Thank
and they you drop
very much.
You off in a police car, you can walk out the door because you are not locked down. It is not a lockdown facility.
Mr. O'Malley, thank you very much. Mr. Ahn, if you'd like 30 seconds.
I'm not sure what growth my opponent is referring to because, again, in the last reporting period, November and December of 2023, one person was brought to the diversion center in lieu of arrest. So when we're thinking about diversion, when we're thinking about these big issues, we have to make changes. This is the only way that we're going to prevent that cycle of trauma, the only way that we're going to make our communities safer, and the only way that we can make the criminal justice system work for everybody. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ahn. If you'd like to respond, Mr. O'Malley, then we'll move on.
No, I think the diversion center has played out. We do need more buy-in. I wish I controlled every law enforcement agency because I would have every low-level felony being dropped off there. But again, we just need more buy-in. We need more training amongst the rank-and-file police officers that make sure that they've all undergone crisis intervention training and that they realize the benefits of taking people to the center to get them out of the cycle of recidivism.
Hey, for the sake of getting some more questions, I'd like to move on to another one here, and that is about the death penalty. Ohio lawmakers have floated the possibility of resuming executions in the state using nitrogen hypoxia, a method that deprives a person of oxygen until they die. Lori in Moreland Hills asks, what is your stance on the death penalty? And I'll frame the question this way. Should the Cuyahoga County Prosecutor's Office be pursuing death sentences at all? Mr. O'Malley, we'll start with you.
Certainly. You know, since I became Cuyahoga County Prosecutor, we've had approximately 1,450 homicides. It's probably enough to fill a high school gymnasium. During that time, half of those cases, approximately, have been capital eligible. My office, not for the last 4 or 5 years, has gone forward on 6 cases. 5 of those cases, jurors have come back with the recommendation and the determination that capital punishment should be imposed. Cuyahoga County has not had a capital case since 2019. So I would say this, very, very infrequently should capital punishment be sought. When it is, it should only be the most egregious cases. And as I indicated, those are few and far between since we've had 5 out of the last 1,450 murders our county.
Thank you very much, Mr. O'Malley. Same question for you, Mr. Ahn. Should the prosecutor's office pursue death sentences?
The short answer, no. And let me just put my opponent's statistics in context. The death penalty cases that he's talking about, that was enough for Cuyahoga County to lead the entire nation in new death sentences during the first 5 full years of my opponent's tenure. Everybody else has realized that the death penalty is a policy failure on every level. Let me explain what I mean by that. The death penalty does not reduce the murder rate. States with a death penalty have a higher murder rate than states without for every single year that we have data. In addition, the death penalty is prone to error. We've seen 8 wrongful death sentences here in Cuyahoga County. It is prone to bias. It is more expensive than sentencing somebody to life in prison. And the lengthy appeals processes that come with a death penalty case re-traumatize victims and deny them closure over years and years and years. I will not seek the death penalty as your Cuyahoga County prosecutor because it does not keep our community safe and it does not make our community stronger.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. Again, if you would, please hold your applause. Thank you. Now to the next question, which will be for both of you. Across the country, in state and federal courts, most criminal cases end in plea bargains. Should the prosecutor's office always push for a plea deal, or should more cases go to trial where a jury can evaluate the evidence and decide a defendant's guilt? Mr. Ahn, we'll start with you.
So this question is sort of an odd one because I think there's no easy yes or no answer to the direct question, but it gets at a practice that's called overcharging. Overcharging is when a prosecutor's office stacks a bunch of charges on somebody, perhaps some that might be a little difficult to prove at trial, in order to try to gain leverage to force a plea bargain. It makes the playing field and the negotiating field uneven. And this is one of the things that has led to a bunch of shaky convictions that don't necessarily stand up on review. These are the kinds of things that lead us, that lead our community to not have faith in our criminal justice system. I have already committed to ending the practice of overcharging so that if there is a plea deal to be made, it can be made with both parties negotiating in good faith. And if a case needs to go to trial, then it should go to trial, and the prosecutor's office will do everything in its power to win that trial. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ahn. Mr. O'Malley, same question for you.
Certainly. You know, overcharging is really a buzzword that is hard to touch and hard to understand and harder to see. Now, we could see overcharging if the Cuyahoga County Prosecutor's Office was charging every capital case and then pleading them down to murder. That doesn't happen. Since I came into office, the amount of cases that even have a capital specification is less than 1%. In the old days, it was significantly higher. Now, as far as pleas within the system, those are decisions that are made between defense attorneys, their client, and the state. And those defense attorneys, I believe, know their cases, understand their cases, and after discussing them with their client, come to the best resolution for their client. And so to say that somehow that representation is faulty or somehow not in their best interest, I disagree with completely. And I think the public defender's office would disagree with that as well.
Thank you very much, Mr. O'Malley. Mr. Ahn, if you'd like 30 seconds.
Every time I have gone to one of our communities of color, I get a question about overcharging, right? Maybe it is a little slippery to define because it happens oftentimes not on the record but in back rooms in terms of coercive plea bargaining, but people know that this is an issue that has been plaguing our community for a while. And you look at the different charging practices for surrounding counties and you'll see a big difference. Once again, though, my opponent, and this is something I tried to mention earlier, anytime a problem comes to his feet, he says, hey, it's this other person, it's not my job, I don't have control over this.
Thank you very much. I reject that
framing. We can do better in the prosecutor's office.
Thank you, Mr. Ahn. Mr. O'Malley, if you'd like 30 seconds to respond.
I would be interested if he had one case where he could demonstrate that case was somehow overcharged. Half my grand jury unit is composed of minority prosecutors who are presenting that case.
Ladies and gentlemen, folks, appreciate it, but let's save this to the end. Please may continue.
Half of my grand jury unit is composed of minorities, prosecutors. I don't believe that they're going into the grand jury room and somehow overcharging individuals. It doesn't happen. It's not a practice. They charge, and just to be fair, grand jurors vote on the charges, not the county prosecutor's office. And the indictments are issued by a group of citizens from our county.
Thank you very much, Mr. O'Malley. I do want to go on to another question here. Cuyahoga County is now weighing its options for the future of the Justice Center Courts Complex. What should the county do? Should it build new or should it renovate what we have? I understand it's not your decision, but you have a voice in this as the prosecutor or potential prosecutor. So, Mr. O'Malley, we'll start with you.
Well, let me start with the first issue we talked about was the first jail site. I would like to think that I single-handedly stopped the construction of the jail. It's a toxic site on Transport Road. It was my advocacy against that site that I believe ultimately caused it to end. Having said that, we now have a new clean site in Garfield Heights. That is a decision of the county council, and it appears, given the fact that they've already voted on it, they've approved the tax increase, that we're gonna have a new complex out there for the criminal justice issues. Now, as far as the courts tower, I do believe, in my heart, that the courts tower just needs to be rehabilitated in place, take down the old jails, and put parking up there for the public. Because after the hotel was built at the Hilton, they took 450 spots from the Huntington Park garage. Those are spots the jurors parked at. Those are spots that witnesses and victims parked at. So it is my hope that what we see going forward is a rehabilitated courts tower with additional parking added on.
Thank you, Mr. O'Malley. Mr. Ahn, the same question for you. Should the county build new or renovate what we have at the Justice Center?
You know, I was not privileged to sit on the steering committee. I don't have access to the reports that tell us exactly what the structural problems are with the current building. But I believe firmly that we need to keep the entire complex downtown. We need the courts and the jail to be next to each other because the logistical problems and the costs that are going to come with separating them are immense. Now, One thing that I think is very important is that the prosecutor does have some ability to affect the jail population based on its pretrial detention policies. We have folks under the cash bail system that we have right now who sit in the county jail charged with relatively low-level offenses, not convicted yet, because they cannot put a few hundred dollars together. And yet, people charged with things as serious as aggravated murder are given an opportunity to pay their way out. We can switch to a public safety-based system that will keep our communities safer and ensure that the jail is reserved for only the most dangerous individuals, lowering the jail population, making some of these problems much easier for our county government to solve.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ahn. You've actually jumped forward to the next question I wanted to get to.
May I respond to jail?
Sure, if you'd like to respond to that, and then we'll move on.
I didn't get to talk. Sure. Jail population, well, that's a great, great, great question. Since when I came into office in 2017, we had roughly 2,200 people in the county jail. Since that time, it is anywhere now down to 1,400 to 1,500. And I believe part of that, besides the ankle monitoring system that our county sheriff's office is operating, is the policy I enacted that we agree with the recommendation of the bond commissioner's office
and don't object
to it.
Thank you, Mr. O'Malley. Mr. Ahn, if you'd like to respond.
Sure. I would note that this number, 1,400, 1,500, is about 50% higher than the jail population was during the COVID pandemic. Now, I do think that one of the things that my opponent has said at multiple prior debates is that cash bail is not an issue because the bail project is already spending its money to get folks out of jail. Once again, not his problem, despite it being a mess that he has 100% control over solving in the first place. I would not take this approach. I would take these issues head on.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ahn. This was the question I wanted to get to, so I'll allow you guys to have a little bit more time if you'd like to talk about this more. Do you have any response to...
On the cash bail?
On the cash bail question,
certainly.
Yes.
Well, you know, as I indicated, and I think this is another issue that Matt needs more fundamental understanding is that bonds are set by judges, not by prosecutors. And as I indicated, I don't know why he tries to deceive the crowd here, but I enacted a policy when I came into office that we would not object to the recommendation of the bond commissioner, who is an employee of the court system, unless there was a risk to the victim, such as we see in domestic cases, or there was a potential for a flight risk. We rarely, if ever, object to the recommendation of the bond commissioner's office, and I believe that has had a significant impact on the bonds the judges set.
Thank you very much, Mr. O'Malley. I'm told by our timekeepers that we have time for one last question before we move on to closing statements. For our last question, I'd like to give you the same question that our high school debaters will be discussing in just a short time here. Is punishment an important part of the justice system? We sometimes refer to prison as rehabilitation, but how much do you think it's your job to punish people who commit crimes versus rehabilitate them? Mr. Ahn, we'll start with you.
This is a great question. I do want to note first, the Cuyahoga County created the second ever juvenile court in the nation because they understood that punishment should not be the goal for our children. It should be, how can we give them the tools to become productive adults in our society? That being said, what we know about deterrence is that we deter crime by ensuring that folks feel like they will see consequences for their crime. And so we need increased enforcement against what I would call crimes of power. This includes things like crimes of violence, sex crimes, human trafficking, but also other abuses of public office or abuses of power, things like wage theft as well. This is why this has all been folded into what I call targeting crimes that harm our community. We need to make sure that we have more aggressive enforcement, that plea deals are not made from first degree felonies if they are really truly supported by the facts down to misdemeanors, that these sorts of things are targeted very heavily. Because that is the way that we can actually deter these crimes of power
in
the first
place. Thank you, Mr. Ahn. The same question for you, Mr. O'Malley. How much is punishment versus rehabilitation the point of the justice system?
Well, you know what? To me, it's all about rehabilitation. You know, the way I look at it, my purpose here is an attempt to end recidivism. And while we have victims who passionately cry out for punishment, my focus internally is always with the understanding that at some point, that individual is going to return to our streets, return to his family, and return to our community. That's why I think it is imperative that when they are doing their time, that they are given programming so that when they return to our community, they can do so in a way that is productive, that keeps our society safe, and that ends the cycle of recidivism that we see too often. So my focus is always about rehabilitation. I understand victims crying out for punishment, but internally to me, it's all about rehabilitation.
Mr. O'Malley, thank you very much. We got a little bit of time for rebuttal, so I'll give you 30 seconds, Mr. Ahn, and then you'll get some too.
Thank you. My opponent has started to talk a big game about rehabilitation, especially as he has seen my campaign gain more and more steam. But look at the policies and look at the outcomes out of the prosecutor's office, and what you will see are practices that actually cause an increase in recidivism rates. I have the data and the research. I understand how to actually prevent that crime in the long term. That is the change we need to make our communities safer and to make our communities stronger. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ahn. Mr. O'Malley, I'll give you 30 seconds if you'd like, then we move on to closing statements.
You know, I'll just say this. You know, anyone who knows me and really knows me knows my internal focus. My focus never has anything to do with politics. My focus has everything to do with what's doing what's right. And I'll say this, with Mr. Ahn in this race, somebody else in this race, or no one in this race, I continue to seek rehabilitative issues and opportunities for those who are incarcerated so that they can turn their life around.
Thank you very much, Mr. O'Malley. And now, if you'll hold your applause, we are nearly to the end. We're now moving to our closing statements. Each side, again, has 90 seconds. And as a reminder, the order will be the same as the opening statement. So, Mr. O'Malley, we'll start with you.
Thank you. Anybody who knows me always knows that I just talk off the cuff and speak from the heart. And as I was preparing my closing today, I thought, what would be appropriate for this event at this time, at this City Club, about this issue? And I remembered when Bobby Kennedy spoke, I was a child, but on April 5th, 1968, he addressed the Cleveland City Club in front of 1,200 people and talked about the menace of violence within our community. It was the day after Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated. It was with the understanding that he lost his brother several years earlier to the senseless violence that we've seen in our community. But what that speech did was urged all Americans to work together to end violence, to end racial disparities, to end discrimination and bias that was keeping some people down. But it recognized that there was violence being committed for the sake of violence. And it urged all Americans to come together to stop it. And sadly, as we know, 2 months and 1 day later, he became the victim of violence. And so when we leave this room, I urge all of us to come together and try to end the violence that is plaguing not just this community, it's every community, and the only way we can do it is by joining together, not fighting, but agreeing upon the common goal for the common good. I am Michael O'Malley.
Thank you very much.
I am Ryder for County Prosecutor.
Thank you very much, Mr. O'Malley. If you can hold your applause, please. We're very nearly to the end. Mr. Ahn, we'll make sure you've got silence in the room, and you'll have 90 seconds for your closing statement.
Thank you all for being here. It has been an honor to share my vision for how to make our communities stronger and safer. The data and the research tells us that early intervention, evidence-based sentencing, and timely accountability reduces crime and makes our communities safer. Common sense tells us that transparency and collaboration in the prosecutor's office reduces burdens for our judges, our law enforcement, and our communities. But again, this is not what's happening right now. We have a crisis of leadership at the top of our prosecutor's office. We have an elected official who refuses to understand the research and the data behind addressing and preventing crime. We have an elected official who pursues policies that worsen racial disparities and make us less safe. We have an elected official who sees fit to blame anybody but himself when crime rises under his watch. We deserve a fighter, not someone who says it's not his job to do everything in his power to keep you and me safe. We can do better than O'Malley's mess. I will fight for your communities every day as your elected prosecutor by targeting the crimes that harm our community, building an office in the people's interest, working to break the cycle of trauma, and supporting rehabilitation through services. My name is Matthew Ahn, and I hope you'll join me on March 19th and in the years to come as we build justice for all here in Cuyahoga County. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ahn. Well, I'd like to say thank you to Matthew Ahn and Michael O'Malley for joining us at the City Club. Thank you for this lively debate.
Thank you, Luke.
And thank you also to the Cuyahoga County voters who submitted questions at cityclub.org for this debate. Forums like this one are made possible thanks to generous support from individuals like you. You can learn more about how to become a guardian of free speech at cityclub.org. This forum is part of the City Club's Criminal Justice Series in partnership with the Shar and Chuck Fowler Family Foundation, as well as the Peter DeLeon Endowed Forum on Local Politics. An attorney and labor expert, Mr. DeLeon, was a member of the City Club for 68 years. In 1967, Mr. DeLeon defended segregationist Alabama Governor George Wallace's right to appear at the City Club, but felt obligated to picket in protest outside of the venue, a story that is integral to the City Club's history. In 1987, he became the first person to be inducted into the City Club Hall of Fame while still living. His daughter, Paulette Novak, remains active with the City Club. We appreciate their long-term support to make forums like today's debate possible for the residents of Cuyahoga County. We'd also like to welcome guests at the tables hosted by the ACLU of Ohio, Cleveland Building Trades Council, Cleveland Clergy Coalition, Cleveland Votes, Cuyahoga Community College, Friends of Jim McDonald, Friends of Matthew Ahn, Friends of Michael O'Malley, Laborers Local 310, Pipefitters Local 120, Morse Legal, Residents for a Safer Cuyahoga County, Signal Ohio, Spellacy LLC, the Shar and Chuck Fowler Family Foundation, the Ohio Organizing Collaborative, and Thrasher, Dinsmore, and Dolan. Thank you all very much for being here today. A quick promo for what's coming. It's a week of debates at the City Club because coming up this Friday, March 8th, the City Club will host the High School Debate Championship as it has done for two decades. In a classic Lincoln-Douglas style, the high school finalists will debate the topic, Resolved, the primary objective of the United States criminal justice system ought to be rehabilitation. A topic no doubt important to many of you in the room today. Tickets are still available online through Wednesday afternoon. And on Friday, March 15th, the City Club will welcome Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice Janet Protasiewicz on the latest fights in her state and what Ohio can learn from Wisconsin's highest court. You can learn about these forums and more at cityclub.org. And don't forget, the county prosecutor race is not the only contest on Democratic primary ballots March 19th. Numerous candidates are also running for judge. Signal Cleveland and the Marshall Project have put together a handy guide for those candidates. You can find that at signalcleveland.org. And that brings us to the end of tonight's forum, today's forum. Thank you to our candidates for joining us today. Thank you, members and friends of the City Club. I'm Nick Castell, and this forum is now adjourned.
For information on upcoming speakers or for podcasts of the City Club, go to cityclub.org.
Production and distribution of City Club forums on IdeaStream Public Media are made possible by PNC and the United Black Fund of Greater Cleveland Incorporated.